Welcome to the Workflow Show. I'm Nick Gold. I'm here with my co-host, Jason Whetstone.
Hey, everyone.
And this is episode 302. We'll just call it
Media Silo.
Media Silo.
And we have a special guest with us, as has been the trend as of late. We've got the, what is it, Kai? Kai Pradel, founder, CEO, genius behind Media Silo.
Yeah, founder, CEO. Yep, that about sums it up.
Well, Media Silo is a company, a technology that we've had involvement with for a good number of years now. Full disclosure, we are a partner and reseller and integrator of / with Media Silo. But of course, we only feature people on our show that we like, and we like their technology. Mm-hmm. We think it's a good fit. Jason, this is one that you've had some very deep dealings
with. Lots of experience with, yes.
Over the years.
It all started back in the days of Final Cut Server, actually. Media Asset Management, the company I was working for, was looking for a way to show some of their Tier 1 clients what kind of footage we had in store for them, what we were sort of managing for them. And we considered building our own front end, our own web-based front end for that. And one of our developers said, well, why don't you check this out? And he showed us Media Silo. And that's where it all started for me.
So let's do it this way. Let's let Kai, for the sake of our listeners, tell us a bit more about Media Silo. I'd love to hear not only kind of the summation of what various kind of cloud-based, you know, media review, approval, sharing, Minimam type tools you guys have, but a bit about the company itself, how you guys came together, the founding process, your own background, and kind of the angle that you come to the video and media space from.
Sure, absolutely. I miss those Final Cut Server days, Jason. That brings me back, and reminds me that we've been doing this for a number of years. So Media Silo is really a lightweight media asset management and collaboration solution that's cloud based, and we kind of we developed it out of the need to have a tool for ourselves. In a former life, I was part of a production company. We were doing commercial production, and at the time, there really weren't any tools that worked great with video. And we got to a point where we did a casting session for a big national bank for a commercial, and you know, it just took 4 weeks to get, you know, their approval on which talent to move forward with, and it was all because of technology, essentially. So we decided, let's just write something and build something better, and that was kind of the genesis of Media Silo.
I mean, had you done coding before? Had you been involved with software development projects? Or was this a bright idea that, you know, turned out to be a lot more work than you expected?
Well, to be honest, my heart has always been sort of split between, you know, video and engineering and software. So in a former life, I had started a software as a service company that ended up in the hands of one of the biggest media and entertainment companies. At Viacom. So my background and my heart is kind of with software development, and I really enjoy solving problems from a technological perspective. So I'm not really a coder by trade, but I'm dangerous enough to make things happen, as many of us are. And over the years, that's just sort of turned into a love for developing web-based application to solve problems and workflow problems specifically.
So you built this thing, and I mean, tell us about the trajectory, because this was how many years ago again?
This was in 2009 that we really started with Media Silo. So over 5 years ago now.
Which is like ancient history in the world of like media technology solutions, right?
Yeah, that's right. Wow, that has been a while. It certainly hasn't felt that long. Yeah, well, we just started out building a small tool set that we would, that we gave to friends and other producers and said, hey, you know, try this out. And we had an open registration at some point, and overnight got registrations from New Zealand and the UK and all over the place. And we didn't really take the tool too seriously, and we're just sort of delighted that somebody was giving us feedback on it. But there was a turning point when we realized, wow, this may be a much more interesting sort of endeavor for us at this juncture as we were picking up steam. And so in 2009, we released the first version of it, which was back then based on Flash and Flex technology. And it was, back then it was rare to have entire applications run in the browser stack. So we were kind of at the forefront of that. And then the tool has really evolved. We're now in the fourth generation of the product. We're kind of getting into the fifth generation. And it's exciting what has happened over the last few years, you know, in our space, but also with regards to what we now can do with browser technologies and what place the cloud is taking in this.
So let's not make any assumptions here about, you know, terminology and things. This thing was born in the cloud, if you will, like a Care Bear, I suppose.
Unicorn.
Somewhere up there in the clouds. What does that mean? I mean, what exact technology platform is Media Silo based on? How is it a cloud-based application, both in terms of storage and the application layer? You know, break it down for our clients so they understand where this thing fits in their overall infrastructure relative to local production storage and on-premise media asset management and workflow automation and transcoding systems. This thing's like somewhere else. So maybe you can kind of get a little more specific about that.
Yeah, so the kind of the exciting thing about any cloud-based service, I think, is that it's sort of turnkey and it's provisioned immediately. And there's no software to install. There's no servers to configure. And that's really the main promise. You can get started with a cloud service without really having to do a whole lot or have a lot of technical expertise. And certainly, you know, for review and approval, we all know that creative pros kind of like to, you know, take the path with the least amount of friction. It's 5 o'clock. You want to get something out the door. You don't want to deal with help desk internally because you can't transfer a file to a server. You just want a tool that works, and that's where cloud services really come in handy. And over the last few years, you know, there's probably anyone can probably name 5 or 6 cloud services that they're using. But in 2009, you know, we still pretty much lived in a world where a lot of software was installed. You know, Final Cut Server that Jason just mentioned was an installed product. It was on-prem. And so we found ourselves as kind of an anomaly in a wide field of you know, sort of traditional software installed behind four walls type of scenario. But what that meant for us was that, you know, we were one of the first users of Amazon S3, and they actually wrote up a case study about us. And we started the company just at the right time because we were projecting our storage needs, and that was really difficult. But very quickly, we realized that we would need a lot of storage. So we had either the choice of building internally, doing a co-location type scenario where we put our servers in a data center and the storage in the data center. But then we happened on this Amazon S3 service. And back then, they didn't have anything but S3. That was their only service. There was no EC2. There was no Glacier. There was none of that. And so we started using it, and for a startup, it was excellent because we had very low cost. We could scale with increased demand, and it helped us really, you know, get our feet on the ground and get the product off the ground.
Great.
So let's take it through, you know, again, for folks who may or may not be, you know, familiar with Media Silo, and we obviously encourage them to check out your guys' website because it's fantastic. It's, you know, very easy to kind of take a look at some of the demos and read some of
Yeah, and there's a free offering there that, you know, allows you to kind of, you know,
sign up,
check it out, figure out how it works.
Another benefit of being in the cloud is that you can, like, you know, press a button and, you know, give them a trial, right? But why don't you take them through kind of where you see the product fitting? What workflow needs does it address? Obviously, there's this storage component, and it's cloud-based off-premise storage using Amazon servers. You know, paint the picture for our listeners, if you will, Kai, about, you know, where Media Silo fits in, its core, you know, tool set, and, you know, just where you've seen some particular successes with it for different types of clients.
So in terms of the most common use cases, Media Silo is a review and approval and a media management application. So media review and approval is kind of at the core of the product. That's how we started out. And today we're kind of a media management system in disguise of collaboration. And what that means is that on a day-to-day basis, a user may upload files to Media Silo to share with another group for review and approval, get comments, export those to their editor, and sort of rinse and repeat that cycle. But But really what ends up happening in almost all cases is that as you do that, as you upload review cuts, you realize that you're really building a library of different versions, but you're also building a library of B-roll, and you're beginning to really start to think of this more as an asset management system. And that's typically how we evolve. So In the Door, Media Silo is a collaboration and review and approval tool with mobile apps, with a desktop app, with a browser app. And the longer a production company uses us, the more they realize, hey, this is actually maybe our path to an asset management system. And so as such, you know, the much bigger picture for us is to play a role in what we call democratizing the media, which is making mm-hmm. media more visible in the organization and giving more people, you know, more stakeholders ready access to the media.
Both inside your walls and obviously outside, it's as equally accessible to anyone who has an internet connection, right? As long as, what, basically port 8080 is open and they can view web pages, they're pretty much good to go, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's another advantage of just this cloud-based mindset is that it's all web accessible, right? So I would say that you know, a few years ago when we started, we certainly felt like we were educating the market to an extent because there was a backlash against the cloud and people didn't really know, you know, can we trust this or not? If it's not behind our firewall, is this even safe? And I think mm-hmm. this is not to our credit, but just to the industry in general, there's a shift in mindset to where media in the cloud doesn't necessarily mean that it's not secure. There's ways to lock things down. There's ways to secure things. And once you've come to terms with that, then the cloud really frees you from all the perils of, you know, sort of maintaining an infrastructure yourself. Managing ports and servers and all this stuff certainly is like chief among those.
Well, and I know a lot of our clients, they use services like Vimeo or YouTube.
Yeah.
And they may have some protections in place.
Actually just going to ask you, Kai, can you kind of compare and contrast how Media Silo works as opposed to something like Vimeo or YouTube? Like, you know, what you're saying, I mean, it sounds like I could probably just use like a YouTube account to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if you look at, you know, Vimeo is primarily a distribution platform, right? They do have tools for uploading your own videos and protecting them. But if you look at the core business of how Vimeo makes their money, it's a distribution channel. So, and we see that across the board. YouTube is a distribution channel. It's not really meant to be a tool set for content creators. It's you know, a certain breed of content creator that, you know, distributes directly. But where Media Silo sets itself apart is that it's a collection of tools that's really geared towards the video pro. We understand the workflows that make video work, and we understand the supply chain of video from when it comes off the camera, when it goes into your logger, to your NLE, to, you know, the cloud for review and approval. So that's really what separates it. You know, on the surface, if you're looking for just review and approval tools, you know, you're going to find that you have a lot of options out there. But as far as taking it to the next step and really fitting into the day-to-day workflow of somebody who produces a lot of content and does it professionally, that's our niche. That's how we fit
yeah,
in.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys have great user management tools and notification tools and, you know, all kinds of things that really speak to that, I would say.
Metadata, keyword tagging, mm-hmm. the ability to import rich metadata through your guys' extensive APIs. So if you are exporting something and publishing from an on-premise MAM into Media Silo, this is something that you've been working on lately, Jason. Mm-hmm. You can kind of spit some of the metadata through to you guys so they can become search parameters, obviously time code-based annotations and kind of subclipping capabilities so people can, you know, not just type a little response for the piece as a whole, but can, you know, have marker and subclip level annotations to, you know, speak collaboratively with other people on their team about, hey, this little portion right here needs such and such, and this little portion right here needs such and such, and oh, I like this, and oh, this stinks, and, you know, you guys even have like transcription services that are, you know, outsourceable through the platform, correct?
Yeah, we have services integration and transcripts is one of them. And that's what's really exciting about cloud-based technologies. I think that we're seeing this this, you know, new push towards APIs. I was listening to your metadata podcast with Nexidia, and I think one of the takeaways was that every one of your panelists there was talking about APIs, and that's what we can bring to the table in terms of a cloud-based platform. We can tap into these different APIs, and we could bring the services together so that you as a user don't have to go to transcription, you know, to transcription vendor and go to an encoding vendor and go to a media management vendor, but find all that under one umbrella.
Yep. And from a developer standpoint, you know, Media Silo's API is very straightforward. You know, it's a REST API, very easy to use, very well documented. So it's great.
So tell us about some of the different types of clients who are using Media Silo and again, what the workflow looks like for them.
So clients really range from small to medium-sized production companies all the way to the big five. So we support anything from, you know, a single user to 5,000 users. Surprisingly, though, the workflows are pretty similar across the board. So just because we're supporting a bigger company and a bigger footprint, it doesn't necessarily change what people do with the platform. At the core, it is an easy way to upload your video, play it back, share it with people aggregated online, enrich it with metadata. But there's definitely some workflows that stand out that only a cloud platform can really provide. An example is we're working with a client that is in the middle of a huge digitization project, and they're digitizing 250,000 hours of content. And they have no idea how to properly capture metadata, which is, you know, a whole, you know, series of sessions in of itself. I know you guys
absolutely
have talked about this in the past. But so what Media Silo is doing, it's essentially a platform that allows them to outsource the logging to a group of loggers that are anywhere, right? So instead of outsourcing the whole project, they can now manage their own team of loggers. They have 20 or 30 loggers. They have a web-based platform where these loggers can log in at all hours of the day. They're not managing people in a, you know, central location where they clock in and clock out, but they're using this the power of a distributed platform to work together to get a lot of footage logged. So that's one of the more exciting projects on a large scale. But really on any scale, it's all about managing media, managing metadata, making it accessible, and building on top of that. What we're seeing a lot is an uptake in our API to build things like stock footage storefronts. I had a conversation with a production company here in Boston where they created a documentary for CBS about the Red Sox, and they shot 90 hours of footage. And the finished piece that they licensed is an hour and a half, which leaves them with a ton of footage. And as you know, there's a lot of avid Red Sox fans. So they were looking for a way to monetize that content. And they said, hey, why can't we just set up a storefront? And so we see our platform used for that purpose as well.
That's interesting.
Very nice.
Talk about what the model is that people, you know, have for subscribing to Media Silo. Because, again, it's not something you buy. It's something you subscribe to. So what does that look like for, you know, an organization? What are the metrics that they get charged based on?
So it's primarily around the number of users. There's two options. Media Silo is storage agnostic. So if you want to bring your own Amazon account, you can do that. In that case, you control storage and you control bandwidth. And you also pay the retail Amazon prices. Or we have a turnkey service, and it's primarily priced around the number of users. But I think what's interesting is that especially with small to medium-sized production companies, we see that there's a real interest in reselling this as a service to their clients. So
yep.
we work with companies that are not traditionally video producers, but that have thousands of hours of product testimonial videos or product, you know, training videos. And the production companies that are generating that content and are in a vendor relationship with those clients, they use Media Silo as a media management system to that company. So that all of a sudden there's transparency, there's a turnkey cloud platform, and now there's visibility into the assets that are available.
Do you guys allow kind of white labeling and people to skin the Media Silo experience so it's kind of branded around their own entity's branding and things like that?
There's customization. There's no white labeling. We did that initially, but we really found that it's actually an asset to a company to know that Media Silo is behind this, because you have a support number to call. You know, you have a chat window that you can log on. So if the end user has a question, it's not the production company that has to answer the question, but it's actually us that picks up the phone.
Got it. So is there a difference? Yeah, I think there is. I would submit there is in many ways, but you know, it'd be interesting to hear your response. What is the difference between a MAM and a workflow automation platform of the sort that people might have on premise in the form of Reach Engine or CatDV or EMAM, or you know, even something like Advantage or you know, Cantimo, what have you, and what you guys are offering in the cloud, you know, through Media Silo? Can you compare and contrast and talk a little bit, and then we'll probably steer in this direction, talk a little bit about, you know, do these things kind of interface with one another? Do mm-hmm. they solve different problems, and yet they can kind of be joined as one?
Yeah, that's, wow, there's a lot in that question.
Yes, there sure is.
I like packing things tight. Yeah.
Yes, it's like a facet of answers. So I think workflow is obviously very subjective, and it can be very complex. At the beginning of every workflow is visibility and having a central place from which things can take place. Maybe the best way to illustrate how we look at workflow is by just kind of explaining how we would integrate with custom, you know, a custom workflow, how you could create your own custom workflow. We're very web-centric, so the team here, we're 22 people. We have 10 engineers, and we're all really avid web developers. We look at what's around us, and we look at what the web in general is doing when it comes to workflow automation. So there's services you may have heard of, like If This Then That or Zapier.
Yep.
Does that ring a bell mm-hmm. at all?
Yep.
So they have nothing to do with workflow, right, for traditional post-production use cases. But what they're doing is it's sort of the parallel in other industries. If you want to automatically send a tweet when there's a new file in your Dropbox, then Zapier can do that, or If This and That can do that. And so this is a really interesting breed of product that we're looking at. So the way we're looking at extending our media management platform is through what's called webhooks. And so when an action is performed in Media Silo, let's say somebody edits a tag of an asset, then it sends a webhook to a service like Zapier, and Zapier then can interpret that and say, oh, there was an asset update event, which means that I should probably feed that back into my, you know, main asset management application, or I should send a notification to somebody like that. So we're looking at workflow from the perspective of how can we be a piece of the bigger puzzle and integrate with services that are starting to revolutionize workflows in areas not just within post-production. So we're a little bit less specific in terms of triggering a sequence of events directly within Media Silo and letting you script that, though you could certainly do that with the API. But we're steering our customers a little bit more in the direction of what is the web doing in general, and what opportunities exist with ready-made tools that are not going to cost a ton and that can be customized easily.
Gotcha.
Now, you also have a lot of clients, I believe, who are integrating Media Silo with on-premise management systems, correct?
That's our most common use case. So mm-hmm.
I've actually done three of those. Right, three different MAMs.
You should talk about this. No, but this is a really good point, because the existing MAMs are either in place for a long time, and there's a high cost in switching those. We're certainly not trying to replace a traditional DAM system. That's not our place. There's a lot of complexity in building something like Final Cut Server or North Plains, but I think what we do a lot of is be the transparent layer to that media and be the flexible layer that can be, you know, that's sort of consumer friendly. And that goes back to democratizing media. So you have media in different locations. Let's say you're a company that has three offices and you're storing media in those three locations. You're trying to paint a picture of, you know, have a single place to go when you're searching your media. And, that's hard to do for most asset management platforms. So, you know, we work with CatDV a lot, and that's certainly a use case that comes up a lot there. You've got different CatDV catalogs or installs in different locations. There's no easy way to then bridge that and create one simple, you know, search query that retrieves assets across the board. So that's a use case we support quite frequently.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I love about Media Silo is the flexibility. I mean, at the very basic level, you know, to get media to Media Silo, you pretty much upload it to a virtual FTP server, which is that's the most basic level of integration. But then you can extend that with the API to doing, you know, metadata transfers and queries and all kinds of different things. So that's, you know, one of the things I love about it.
Jason, you mentioned earlier that one of the projects you did had to do with exposing media to clients of the organization that you did the integration between the on-premise MAM. And mm-hmm. I think that had started as a Final Cut server, and then you ended up kind of redoing the Media Silo integration around CatDV once Final Cut server died,
right.
and they had moved over to that. And so it was a way of, again, on the cloud without presenting any barriers or impediments to the clients, give them a site that they can go into from any computer to review stuff that the company was working on for them.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
What was the other use case? I know what it is. It was different, and it's a different kind of use of Media Silo in some ways.
Maybe are you talking about to the review and approve?
Yes, the more recent one, without mentioning maybe the client by name, but we probably will do a full-on
Case
study soon. But
I've actually done two different clients with this use case, which is they wanted a place that they could upload their media to so that TV stations or radio stations could access the media. You know, very simple form of distribution. It's got to be controlled, though. We only want certain people to be able to get this media.
And this is so those broadcast entities have access to versions that are of a high enough quality that they can then download.
Broadcast quality media, exactly. Not necessarily, we're not talking about 4K here, but we're talking about broadcast quality media. And in both scenarios, the reason that that Media Silo was chosen was because the client was kind of struggling and fighting with their IT internally about, well, we'd like to have an FTP server so that we can send, you know, FTP links to, you know, our radio stations and TV stations so they can download the media. And I remember in the second case, I had already done this for another client. So I said, well, why don't we just do Media Silo? I mean, it's kind of a perfect solution for this.
Well, and it's better than FTP because it gives someone a very nice, rich, web-based user interface where they can view the media directly. If they wanted to enter any annotations or notes or things like that, they could.
And in this particular, the second use case here, we're using Media Silo's notification system to notify these broadcasters that there's something available for them. So they get a notification. Essentially, the way the workflow works is the user within their MAM just selects a clip or a video that they want to upload to Media Silo, and that's pretty much all they have to do. They select it, they push it up there, and the broadcaster gets a notification, hey, here's something for you to download that will be broadcast.
So instead of a push-based system where the content creator has to take the act of pushing something to the other party directly, whether that's a server, whether it would have required setting up an Aspera link, high-speed public internet, accelerator, file transfer accelerator technology on both ends of things, which is potentially infrastructure-heavy, capital-heavy, and again, forcing a lot of, interactivity between the client and then the end broadcaster in order for that broadcaster to get a hold of the things to put to air, so to speak. This kind of inversed it in a sense, right?
Right.
It made it a self-service system.
Exactly.
That allowed the broadcaster at their leisure to go through, search, get access to the broadcastable versions of assets that, through a push button action in
pretty
the on-premise
much,
MAM,
it's
right?
Pretty much a right-click,
Send to Media
Send to
Silo.
Partner via Media Silo.
And
is what it's called.
Most recently it was with Reach Engine that we did this, right?
Yep. And the other thing that's great about this is with a product like Reach Engine, you have so much flexibility with the workflow the workflow tool to be able to let's say you've got three different broadcasters all expecting different transcode settings, for the media that they'll be broadcasting. You can push all three different transcode versions to different projects in Media Silo, give your broadcaster all the different contacts, usually the sales guy, there's a bunch of different people at each broadcast organization that need to get notifications. So you set them all up as users and you give them access to the different projects. And then, when they get media, they get a notification. It works great.
Is metadata getting passed as well? And what are the types of metadata that the, mm-hmm. that client has chosen to pass through that that separate corporate entity, the broadcaster, would want to have and be able to search on in Media Silo?
So in this case, no, there's no metadata being transferred in, but there could be via the API. Also, I believe Media Silo's Final Cut Server integration still works. Last I checked, it did.
And we parse XMP metadata in file headers.
That's right.
As well.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you use Prelude or use Premiere and you're editing any metadata, that automatically gets sent along and read.
Yep. So totally doable, easily doable. Or you,
Jason,
can...
you said something earlier on that I thought stood out and I think is worth talking about a little bit, because you said that they had a this use case started out where they had a problem with their IT department and they wanted to do something. They wanted to, you know, upload their clips. And this is something that we hear a lot. I think we're sort of in the middle of this revolution, not just within media and entertainment, but when we're looking at software as a service in general, it's changing how software is sold and it's changing who's the decision maker behind, you know, making these buying decisions. And it's really the creative pro that is more and more front and center of deciding what tool set is used in an organization. It's no longer a central IT that says, we're implementing an asset management system, but it's the user that says, I have a problem, this is my pain point, I need a solution. And more often than not, a user will, you know, choose a tool that is either a freemium tool or is inexpensive and that just gets the job done. So
exactly.
You know, something like a Hightail or a Dropbox or maybe even a Vimeo or something like that. And this is really fascinating because it's we see it everywhere. And I think, you know, for us, that means that, you know, we just released a desktop client of our QuickLinks app, which lets you just, you know, drag drop, send clips to other people and have this nice review and approval context with it. But this is really driving a whole new generation of products. The fact that as a creative pro, I can now go out and for a few bucks a month, procure a tool that gets around IT and that gets me the solution, right?
Yeah.
And so I think this is important for two reasons. A is the creative pro is has an incredible amount of power and control over choosing this tool set now. But I think from a central IT perspective, and it doesn't matter if you're a 20-person company or, you know, 5,000-person company, I think it's important to know that as long as you can combine those two strategies, which is, you know, the company's overarching strategy to get a handle on asset management and secure things and, you know, have some control over where assets are, and at the same time not be in the way of the creative pro needing to get their work done, then you have a winning combination. And we see this everywhere. You see this with Basecamp, you know, mm-hmm. where teams just go out and for 20 bucks a month get a, you know, project management account. And we see this with various tools around the web. So I just thought that was worth mentioning, because we definitely see a ton of that.
And trust me that when the creative professional goes back to the IT department and says, don't worry about that FTP server, we solved our problem, we're going to take care of it another way, the IT people are usually like, great, you know, we're relieved. We don't have to, you know, set up this special thing for you now with open ports and all kinds of special considerations and
yeah,
bandwidth,
it's funny,
and all that.
You mentioned earlier, Kai, that there used to be security concerns about using the cloud for storage of proprietary assets. And I think a lot of the situations we find ourselves in, having someone push something up to the cloud media silo and allowing very granular access to those assets amongst a very self-selected group of people through that, you know, robust platform, Amazon, you know, they've got their security experts looking at everything 24/7, right? To us, that represents a much higher level of security than opening up all sorts of aspects of your own infrastructure to mm-hmm. let people into a self-hosted system that now someone could theoretically slip into and then, you know, have run of the place, you know, from the IT infrastructure perspective. So, yeah, to us, I think it's actually presented itself as a high security option to
absolutely.
Put things out on Media Silo.
And now, I've seen that over the years, we talked about earlier, I started working with Media Silo very early and you guys' development. And I've seen, you know, the sort of development over the years of how you guys have been concerned and responding to your clients' concern about security, password protecting quick links, being able requiring strong passwords for users, all that kind of stuff. It's, you know, it's gotten, in my opinion, very much secure.
You know, Kai, you were mentioning some of the other kind of online software as a service collaboration tools. You mentioned Basecamp a moment ago. And that's kind of an interesting segue. I wanted to bring this up. We obviously have a lot of different levels of collaboration that take place across production, post-production, distribution, broadcast, etc., right? And review and approval of media is a very common type of collaborative activity that takes place in this world. As we were talking about a moment ago, being able to distribute your media as a content creator and pushing it out to the distributor or broadcaster, very, you know, important collaborative act of getting the thing that you've produced out there. There's a lot of other types of collaboration that take place in this space, though, like project management, management of project files that you may be working on, versioning of project files, not the media assets necessarily, but, you know, the Premiere project, et cetera, you know, the Final Cut 10, mm-hmm. whatever they call it these days, the library or whatever, right? you know, your Avid project.
The Paradigm.
You know, you've got versioning, you've got checking in and checking out. You know, Adobe themselves, through their Anywhere platform, again, which is a very on-premise type of technology build-out, despite the fact that it kind of turns aspects of your facility into essentially a private cloud. But they've got this collaboration hub that's part of Anywhere to start to handle some of these other collaborative workflows that take place around the project and the different types of people who might be involved, the producers, the editors, you know, AEs, you name it. Can you talk a little bit more about maybe some of what you guys have going on, either currently, what some of the vision is, about where you think your platform can start to step into some of these other spaces that involve the collaborative tasks that happen day to day in post-production broadcast, and how, you know, maybe that would fit into the existing set of offerings? Any thought about additional offerings? Again, I just find all these needs. I mean, I can't tell you how many times Farmer's Wife, which from what I gather is a kind of slightly not loved, you know, file maker based database for actual production and post-production, you know, management tasks. But again, it's a file maker database that you run on premise, and a lot of people just rely on it because it's kind of what's out there. Have you guys looked at this stuff? And I mean, maybe you can hint at what's either out there or what's coming or what you guys have, you know, thought about.
Yeah, that's a great question, Nick. So I think you have to, as a company, you just have to sort of understand your focus and the problem that you can solve. We've looked at extending Media Silo to do more in the production space, you know, to deal more with project management, to deal more with sort of auxiliary information that's not pertinent to the assets. And I think we've honed in that the problem we want to solve, the problem that we see and we hear about every day is removing friction in for creative pros, making it easier to get review cuts to the users, making it easier to distribute the files, to put them in a central location, to enrich them with metadata. So the direction that we're going is really to look at the creative pro, the individual, as our main use case and what they try to do, and at the same time look at what kind of role can we play in the larger larger organization. So can we solve a distribution problem for the editor and also a security problem for the enterprise, so that, you know, sort of there's a top to bottom and bottom to top approach? And that's what you'll see us focusing on. But that also means that we're looking at ways that we can make video smarter, and we're looking at ways that, given that we have sort of an API first mindset, that we can consume other APIs to make video more relevant. So, you know, I'll give you an example. If you uploaded a file, we currently will create waveforms, we'll create sprites, we'll create different proxies, we'll transcode the video in different formats, so that if they ever get requested on a mobile device that requires a specific codec, you can play it back. What if you could also, by default, you know, run a phonetic search over it? Or what if you could do automatic keyword tagging with every asset that's uploaded? And what kind of impact would that have in your organization if that happened on aggregate? You know, mm-hmm. it's not the individual clip you upload that maybe needs all this information, but if you use a tool like this and your team does over a period of an entire project, and the end of the project, you're trying to find that one clip or that one outtake, or, you know, the the piece of B-roll that got discarded, and we make it a little bit easier for you to find that. I think that's sort of the mission that we're trying to be on and the problem we're trying to solve.
So if I'm Kai Pradel, am I trying to forge, you know, B2B relationships with people like Nixidia or maybe even Amazon's Mechanical Turk service and things like that, so I can keep offering more and more things that are possibly cloud oriented and you know, just bring added value to my clients of Media Silo? Is that kind of sounding like your perspective? Am I being fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we're totally embracing the technologies that are out there, the services that are out there, and we want to make it easier to put them together and consume those. And I think that's exactly the role that a cloud MAM should play, mm-hmm. you know, is bringing together the best of breed tools and consolidating that under one simple to use interface.
Can I give you a free idea?
Please.
it's a need I see out there. And frankly, I think of all of the software technology vendors out there, there's certainly the ability probably for some of the MAM or DAM vendors to do this. And some of them are kind of in this space. But frankly, I think as a cloud-based service, it makes a lot of sense for you guys to look at as well. Maybe it's something you're working on. Heck, maybe it's a feature of the platform that's there that I'm just not as familiar with. Let's say I am, you know, we handle, of course, a lot of backup issues for our clients, right? We yeah. build SANs, we build NASs.
Tape libraries.
We build big ass, yeah, big arse. I just said arse, by the way, listeners. Oh, wait, we're not on the radio. I can say whatever the F I want. we build, you know, all of these storage systems, and we build backup systems that can, you know, are
sync
typically
volumes.
Oriented around, yeah, whole volumes worth of media files. We build these systems out to handle, you know, changes that may occur in the largest volume of the data you're dealing with, which is the raw media, because you don't really have to worry about re-rendering stuff, because as long as you've got your project file, right. you can re-render. And, you know, so you really need your project files to be well-maintained and backed up, and you really need your media files to be backed up and well-maintained and preserved, of course. And with those two, you can constitute pretty much anything you need to just through a re-render. And we can build all sorts of systems that, like, let's say with a daily level of granularity, can back up, you know, any new or changed raw media files that have landed on your primary production storage volume. And so you can flip over the Frankenstein switch and say, you know, we're going to go to tier two for today. You know, that's our backup volume, and it's yesterday's version of the data. And, you know, in a lot of cases, that day level of granularity for the raw media is perfectly acceptable because of just the volume that they may ingest on a day-by-day basis is not great enough, where the loss of a day's worth of that stuff is a big deal. And they can keep, you know, the media that came in from the field, you know, around a couple of days so they can re-ingest it if they need to. And, you know, they're back up and running very quickly. The challenge tends to be with project files. And we're like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to capture daily level granularity of your project files if they happen to be on that shared storage volume as well. And frankly, it's not always appropriate for those project files to be on the shared storage volume that often is used for media storage purposes. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. I would love to see, because you could kill a couple of birds with one stone here. You could have an offering, call it Project Silo, I don't know. And let's say it's a panel inside of Premiere Pro. It leverages Amazon's web services. And what it is basically a web-based repository for the project file itself that you're working on inside of Premiere. And you hit it exclusively through a panel built that you guys would build out in Premiere, right? And what it would do is capture, maybe with hourly granularity, changes in deltas to project files that you're working on. And I don't know if that can be automated or requires someone to push a button or whatever, but it would give someone the ability to not only know that they're capturing kind of more granular, you know, versions of the project file as it changes, and of course that can happen many times throughout a day, but they also know that that's being backed up to the cloud. It doesn't cost a lot of money because the project files are small. It's convenient because they can grab those project files again from wherever they're sitting on the planet as long as they're on the web. And it could be both a versioning and a project file, you know, version and check-in, check-out kind of platform, and a cloud-based, you know, kind of disaster recovery platform for your editorial project files. Is that something that, you know, you guys have given any thought to? It just seems like there's a need there. And while some of the on-premise MAMs can do that, I see just a whole lot of value of having that be a cloud-based service.
So what you're talking about is like, are you familiar with GitHub?
Yeah, yes. Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it's like a GitHub for your project files.
I think that's a really good way of describing it.
But it sits within Premiere, and you can access it from there, and you can look at your history. Maybe you can even see a list of differences.
Yes. You're reading my mind, man.
I like it.
You know how they pitch movies in Hollywood? Like, apparently the way they pitch movies, it has to be like something meets something and has a baby. So, you know, this would be like your Premiere panel and GitHub, you know, got together and had a baby. Well, and it would be this new thing.
Okay. Yeah, what you're talking about is like it's like the perfect mashup scenario, right? That's exactly mm-hmm. how kind of we're viewing the space. It's taking taking elements from, you know, web development and merging it with the video production world. I mean, that's the stuff that we live and die for.
So here's an idea. You guys build what I just said. I'm a great idea guy, right? But execution, that's for all the much smarter people I work with.
Yeah,
like that guy right across from me right there, you know, we'll let them. But how about you build this? You drop me like a little credit in the splash screen or something, right?
Compliments of Nick Gold.
You give me no more than 25% of the gross revenue. I'll sell the hell out of it. But you get the idea, and 75% of the profits.
Yeah, no, I
and,
love it.
And I think, might I just I say that Nick could sell ice to an Eskimo.
That's not true. I'm not even a sales guy. Well, I'm like a consultant.
Let's give a little bit of credit here to Adobe as well, because, you know, without the possibility of building panels and plugging into that ecosystem, you know, these ideas wouldn't be possible. And that's another direction that I'm hoping that we'll see our industry go, is more towards embracing collaboration and interoperability and mm-hmm. being less about, you know, proprietary stuff.
Well, we know that there was a big video company that's now, you know, not as big and prominent as it used to be, that, you know, kind of very much never really took that approach, even if they paid it lip service over many years. But yeah, it tended to be a very siloed look at things. And, you know, you're talking about this future where it's like you're building your own application layer, right, as a user. You're defining what workflow you need. You're picking and choosing the pieces of the technological ecosystem out there. You know, oh, yeah, I like cutting in Premiere, but I want to do my project management in this platform, and I want to do my medium asset management with this one, and I want to do my archive with this, and I want to have kind of a unified interface. I want it to be streamlined, and I kind of want to build my own platform and tools out of these multiple vendors' options. I think Apple was kind of in that direction originally with Final Cut, you know, through 7. Mm-hmm. Adobe seems to be moving in that direction as well. But seriously, in all seriousness, run with that idea about the cloud-based project backup and management, and check-in, check-out, and versioning, and our clients will eat it up.
We have actually experienced people using Dropbox.
Dropbox is what they're using.
Because the files are not real big, so they're just kind of throwing them on a Dropbox just to get them
and
backed
it's like
up
that's,
somewhere.
It's like, okay. I mean,
sure,
I'm a
it's a good manual
user,
way of doing it.
But if it was through a panel in Premiere, actually did kind of more concrete version control with check-in, check-out processes, whew. Go and make some money off of that one, Kai. Just send me a Hanukkah Christmas card or something arrangement.
Downside,
you know?
the downside to this mashup world is that the ability to monetize these things is also infinitely harder, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's accessible and you can build it and
$10 a month per user. Done.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I like your thinking.
I won't sue you.
Think alike.
I won't sue you if you take the idea. We're putting this on air, David. Make sure to include this in the edit. I said that Media Silo could have this idea. So when you launch it, it just has to be called Nick Gold's Project Silo.
That's right. We have to hold off broadcasting this podcast before that gets released.
Oh, yeah, because we don't want everyone else to steal my awesome idea. Right. I mean, obviously. I put it out there. You guys are probably in a better position than anyone to execute on all sorts of new ideas that come your way, right? Or is it, what's it like, you know? Because, you know, I think, gosh, you guys have this platform that, you know, you can spin up VMs and do whatever you want really quickly. You mentioned having 10 developers. And are you guys pure HTML at this point, or are you using any other third-party frameworks?
Well, we use enterprise Java for our backend stuff.
Backend, sure.
And then on the front end, it's all HTML5, JavaScript, and certain JavaScript frameworks. But yeah, it's all right. Pretty pure web stuff.
So I'm not a coder, right? I think about what I just told you, and I'm like, you should be able to spin that up in like a couple of days, right? I mean, what's it like as you guys are evaluating roadmap and, you know, having to decide? I mean, is a lot of your development being driven by user requests? Do you guys have a strategic roadmap that you're trying to do to build the platform into this thing you have a vision of? I'm curious what drives both the day-to-day activities and
that's a
the longer-term goals.
That's a great question, because it really is like there's you know, there's no shortage of ideas. there's good ones and there's bad ones. Yours is certainly a better one, but there's no shortage of ideas, and that makes it sometimes hard to focus on, you know, what do we do. To give you an idea, when we started out, you know, even just a year and a half, we were processing maybe, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 hours of video a month. And we're now doing over 30,000 hours of video a month that are being uploaded and that need to be processed, and so the scale changes also what you're focusing on and where you can add the most value. But you know, we tend to listen to our users and tend to pay close attention to what the needs are of the market. You know, we released that Premiere Pro panel as one of the first vendors to have an off-the-shelf solution that didn't need any customization. You can download and install it, and all of a sudden, within your Premiere panel, you have access to all the media. You can import the media. You can send quick links from it. So we kind of jump on these opportunities sometimes because we feel there's momentum behind something, and we also want to support it. You know, we're big fans of Adobe for pushing this forward and giving them feedback on their APIs and hopefully making this a better place for everyone, so that we can develop software and solve problems, you know, that haven't been solvable. But it is, you know, we on a tactical level, you know, we sit down here and we look at the different opportunities, and we do short sprints where we get together and say, let's find a solution to this. So I'll give you an example. A few months ago, we started on this logging project and started to explore using a browser-based approach to decentralized logging on a large scale. And so we spent a week to build a prototype to just see if it was possible to build an interface. And we share that with sort of our trusted customers, and we get feedback. And if we feel like the idea has any kind of traction and there's also a commercial opportunity here, then we pursue that a little bit faster. But there's also other ideas that kind of die along the way just because there's not enough support, the opportunity isn't big enough, it's just cool but not really, you know, useful to a large amount of users. So it's sort of weighing the balance between how can we add the most value and how can we produce a tool set that is in line with our overall mindset.
Yikes. Do you ever just bust out the magic eight ball, you know?
Well,
shake it up if you don't like the answer, you know.
Sometimes you have to, but that's why talking to customers and being part of the conversation is always valuable.
Anything in particular, you know, either current or, you know, potential, you know, users should, you know, look for in terms of your developments that might be coming out?
Kai, can you talk a little bit about the desktop application that you mentioned?
So we actually have a ton of stuff that's about to be released. We are very close to releasing a major update, which is project level permissions. It sounds like a mouthful, but what it does is essentially, right now when you're creating a project in Media Silo, you're able to assign a user to it, but that user has an overall role in the system and a certain set of permissions, like they can upload, they can download, they can edit metadata. And it used to be that it was global. For any project, you have the same kind of permissions. And we're just rolling out an update that lets you set that on a granular level. So you may have access to viewing assets in one project, but not downloading and in another project you have full access.
That's great. That's really huge, Kai.
And that changes everything fundamentally. If you will, that's sort of the difference between Dropbox and Box, right? Dropbox is sort of you set basic permission, and in Dropbox, Dropbox is basic permissions, and in Box you actually have granular controls. And for the enterprise, that's really interesting. But it's also great because the second feature that's piggybacked on this is project sharing. So you'll be able to invite somebody from another production company on a project. So if you're collaborating, you've got a visual effects studio and a post house, they can now be sharing the same projects on their own Media Silo account, which also means if you're a freelancer, you could be, you know, you could have a list of shared projects in your Media Silo account and have it all under one roof. So that's a big update that's coming out. We're also improving our encoding farm. So we're starting to generate a lot more information about files. And I have to be a little bit hush about that because we're finalizing some negotiations, but expect to see more on that front. And then we just recently released the desktop app. That's really exciting because it's a tool set that it looks very familiar to anyone who's used Hightail or Dropbox. The only difference is that, you know, you can upload a file, you can walk away, and when it's done uploading, it'll send to the list of recipients, and you get the full Media Silo Quick Link experience without having to log on to a browser. It just sits in your desktop, and it's sort of your companion app for sending rough cuts.
Gotcha.
That's really slick. Mm-hmm. Really slick. Well, you guys sound busy, so I think what we'll do is probably let you get back to being busy with making all of this cool stuff. And again, the thing... I want to just encourage our clients because, I mean, frankly, you know, we have a handful of people we work with who use Media Silo. They all universally love it and rely on it daily. But I have to say, it's one of those things that, I mean, I'm kind of baffled as to why, like, 95% of our clients aren't using it, like, actively in their workflows, because it's just... it's that much more refined over trying to, you know, shoehorn, you know, YouTube or Vimeo into that role. It's a lot slicker than, you know, giving someone an FTP login. You know, if you've ever struggled with sending large email attachments and things like that, no more problem there. So it just seems so incredibly useful. We've described a few different, you know, very different use cases in terms of review and approval for your clients, passing things along to broadcast distribution partners and giving them kind of a self-service gateway. I encourage everyone to try it. And you guys, again, let's be specific about this. You guys make that pretty easy. What can our listeners do this afternoon, tomorrow, to, you know, check out for themselves the Media Silo experience?
We have a free trial on our site that's free for 2 weeks. And you can choose from... 3 different account options, and you can also bring your own Amazon credentials. So if you want to be the master of storage and are not afraid to do a little bit of configuration work on Amazon and S3, then you can choose that option as well. But yeah, it's a free trial. It's turnkey. You sign up and you're able to use it right away. There's no risk. You can cancel at any time. And it's very easy to use.
Well, we would definitely encourage our clients to get in front of it.
Absolutely.
Please keep us looped in on any of your experimentations. We probably have answers for you. Again, we are a reseller, and you can act as an intermediary there. But, you know, it's been great to have you on. Pick your brain. We've known you guys for years. We've been doing more active projects that involve Media Silo lately, and that's only going to accelerate with more and more people having on-premise MAMs. I think it actually, if anything, makes it more obvious to them quickly why they also need something in that overall solution.
When people get into the MAM space and that have never been there before, how fast their minds move to, like, how else could we use this? Like, what are all the potential applications of this? Once they start realizing, like, hey, here's all of our media and we can find it and we can, like, share it with people, then they start thinking, well, like, how can I show my clients this and all that kind of stuff? So that's when we really... that's where you guys come into the picture.
And again, so many of the systems we work with are, you know, very clearly production asset management systems, mm-hmm. right? They are geared both in terms of their look, their aesthetic, their tool set, the technology itself, how you access it, to the set of users inside your gates who are touching the full res media every single day on their production storage. A lot of those platforms it's a very distant thought as to, like, let's put a really nice outwardly facing package on it,
right,
to get it in front of clients, to get it in front of our distribution partners. You guys are just like the slot in, drop in way to answer that question. So I see much more activity with you guys as us and our clients move forward with all of that fun stuff. They just go to mediasilo.com, right?
That's right. Mediasilo.com.
Awesome. Kai, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. We can't wait to get this out there and looking forward to much further adventures.
Yeah, great to talk
Likewise.
With you again.
Same here. Yeah, we look forward to working more with you guys as well. And if it wasn't for integrators that understand, you know, the whole workflow spectrum, it'd be a much more difficult space to be in.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kai. We'll speak again soon.
Okay, take care.
And thank you to our listeners. This has been another episode of The Workflow Show. Take care, everyone.
The Workflow Show is a production of Chesapeake Systems. We welcome your comments and suggestions for upcoming episodes. You can email us at workflowshow@chesa.com. That's workflowshow@chesa.com. And if you'd like to talk with a member of our team of experts about your particular digital media workflow needs, email us at prosales@chesa.com. That's prosales@chesa.com. Or call us at 410-752-3406. That's 410-752-3406.